We got up to the top of Daf Mem Tes Amid Aleph, approximately four lines down from the top. Bizman Shehein Lachin. So the Mishnah tells us that there are certain materials that are Mosif Hevel. If you insulate with those materials, it increases the heat, and therefore these materials are prohibited on Erev Shabbos, because the Dovra Ein Tomnim B'Dovra Shemosif Hevel. But with regard to straw, and a whole list following, that only applies when they're moist. And then they're Mosif Hevel. Iboilu, the Gemara has a suffix. Lachin Machmas Atzman, O Dilma Lachin Machmas Dovar Acher. What kind of a moisture makes it into, in the case of straw and the like, a Dovar Mosif Hevel, and therefore generates a prohibition of Atmona? Is it a natural moisture which is internal, so to speak? It is Machmas Atzmon? Or is it that you took these objects and you put them into a basin of water and you made them moist, and even that's considered a Dovar Amosif Hevel, and that's considered Lachim, even though it's Machmas Dovar Acher, it's external, it's something that you added. So again, everybody agrees that if it's naturally moist, that fits the category of a Dovar Amosif Hevel, and it's Asur. Would it be Asur even if it's not naturally moist, but you added moisture? There was a human intervention. Toshma, I'm going to prove to you from the Mishnah, because I'm going to prove to you from the list of the materials that fit this category in the Sefer, the Mishnah, Bizman Shein Lachim, there are things that by nature could not be moist. So let's go through the list of the Mishnah that's relevant to us. It says Lo B'Tevin, okay, that's straw. Sometimes straw is moist. V'Lo B'Zogim, okay, that could be perhaps moist because you have, wet with liquids in it, liquid-filled fruits, and then the pulp or the skins have a certain moisture to them. But then it says, v'lo b'mochin, these are kinds of cotton that we said, you use to stuff a pillow, or maybe it's shearings, from the back of the wool, wool, back of the sheep. V'lo b'asovim, b'zman shein lachim. So the Gemara says, "Iyamet bishlem lachin matzmas dover achas shapir." Even if you add the moisture from the outside, that's also qualifies as lachim and generates the isur. Then I understand very well that everything on this list fits into the category of lachim. Iyamet, if you're going to have a more restrictive definition of lachin, it means lachin machmas atzmon, that it's got to be natural moisture. Is mochin lachlin machmas atzmon hechi mishkachesle? Why would you say that the shearings off the back of a sheep are lachim machmas atzmon? Is there any natural lachus in the case of wool? Wool is dry. So the Gemara answer is no. You can have wool that's naturally wet, because the animal grows wool in many different parts of its body. And mimirta deveni atme, the Gemara is now describing where you found this wool, and it's a place where it would be naturally wet, have natural moisture. Where did you find this wool? From which part of the sheep did you shear it? Mibeni means between. Mirta means the part that you cut off, atme. So it was between the thighs. You took it out from between the thighs of the sheep. And that's where the sheep sweats a lot, and there's natural moisture in that wool. The Gemara now again wants to prove that you need that even if it's external moisture, it's considered moisture. Vatani Rabbi Oshia Tomnim Biksus Yevashim Beperis Yevashim Avalo Biksus Lachov Avalo Beperis Lachim. So on this list of Rabbi Oshia, where he differentiates between moist and dry, as far as the Iser of Hatmana, if it's moist, because it's Dovra Mosif Hevel, he's got Peros, okay, that we understand, that Peros has a natural moisture, but he has Ksus. Ksus means clothing. Like the Torah says, Sher Ksus Viona, right? That's clothing. And clothing are not naturally moist. So it means that we have to push Lechumra and say that even if the moisture was external, it still is considered Dovra Mosif Hevel, it's Aser Batmana. And Gemara rejects this as well, mi mirta de bene atme. That once again, what you did is you took the wool from between the thighs of the animal, which we said were naturally wet, and you made it like a clothing. In other words, it's not really a full-fledged garment yet, but maybe you started, you know, weaving it, but it still has this natural moisture in it that's saturated inside the very particles of the wool, and therefore it might be natural and inherent moisture, but not external moisture. The Gemara really doesn't come to any specific conclusion. Some of the poskim say here it's a suffix drabona lakula, and therefore we could be makil, and if it's external moisture, that's not going to be a dover amosif, a mosif hevel. Now we get up to the Mishnah here, and it's the first Mishnah of two Mishnayos on Daf Memtes Amud Aleph. Now, until now, the Mishnah and the Gemara has addressed Bameh Ein Tomnim, meaning what are those materials that are Mosif Hevel. Now the Mishnah addresses Bameh Tomnim, meaning what are the materials that allow you, that are allowed for Hatmona, meaning they're not Mosif Hevel. And that's going to be the list here. Tomnim Biksus Ubiperos. Now, we just had a Brisa, if you remember, of Rabbi Oshia, and he said that if you have Ksus that's wet, is you're not allowed to use it for Hatmona. But you know what? Rav Oshia is quoting a Braisa, and the Braisa could disagree with our Mishnah. Our Mishnah seems to imply, unless you want to say that our Mishnah is talking about dry clothing, but that's a little bit difficult because it says Peros. The Peros are probably wet. Anyway, what kind of Peros would you use for Hatmona? You know, you're not going to use oranges, pears, and apples. So Rashi says it's referring to the five species of grain, which is very similar to straw in its structure, or beans. And there's certain kinds of beans, Rashi says, that can actually increase the heat of the tavshil. Then we have something called kanfei yonah. And we're going to have a lot to talk about this phrase, kanfei yonah, which literally means the wings of a dove, or perhaps the feathers of a dove. And that's also mutter. Benesores, which is always sawdust, shel charoshim. Charoshim are carpenters. Ubeniores shel pishton daka. So when they used to take the flax in its natural state, it was full of impurities, and they would have to beat the flax, make fibers out of them, and comb them in order to remove those impurities. And once they combed them, then they could be used for hatmana, you know, these flax combings, but it would not be Mosif Hevel. Now, the Mishnah added the word daka, which means it's very fine. Rabbi Yehuda over v'daka, it's osur, osur v'daka, but umatir v'gasa. So that even though the Tanakhama indicates that you're allowed to have atmana in Niores Shel Pishtav, but Rabbi Yehuda says that's not true. If it's daka, then it's osur. So the Mishnah went out of its way to say that even daka is mutter, in order to preempt Rabbi Yehuda, who's going to come now and argue and say, no, if it's daka, then it could actually increase the heat. And only in the case of gasa, when it's very coarse, and apparently still left in some of these impurities, only that is something which is shomer es hevel, but not mosif hevel. It only preserves the heat. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yanai, tefillin tzrichim guf naki ke'elisha bal knafayim. So you notice that the Mishnah uses the phrase kanfei yona. And this is sort of a takeoff point, so to speak, for the Gemara to discuss kanfei yona. And the Gemara tells us about a certain individual by the name of Elisha, who is called Bala Knafayim, as if to say he had the wings of a dove. And tefillin, if you want to learn about how clean your body has to be when you wear tefillin, and when you're allowed to wear tefillin, not everyone is allowed to wear tefillin, depends on your state of cleanliness. So you learn it from Elisha Bala Knafayim, because he was, in a sense, the paradigm of the mitzvah of tefillin. Maihi? What do you mean that the body has to be clean? Does it mean you have to take a bath or a shower every time you put on tefillin? It's Abaye Omar Shelo Yafiach Bahem. Now, this is a little bit strange. Keep in mind, just as a background, before we get to Rava, but Abaye, we are talking about a statement of Rabbi Yanai that puts Elisha, Bala Knafayim, on a very high pedestal. Apparently, he's raising the bar, so to speak, on how clean, how careful meticulous you have to be to maintain a clean body. And Abaye says that what that really means, and what Rav Yanai has in mind, is shelo yafiach bahem. Right? He shouldn't pass air. Well, that's a pretty simple kind of requirement. You know, you don't have to be Elisha Bala Knafayim, you know, to guarantee that you won't pass air while you're wearing tefillin. So Rava wants to go a step further. He says, Omer shelo yishan bahem, that you have to be very careful to make sure you don't fall asleep while you're wearing tefillin. And that's an extra chumrah to separate yourself from a possibility of maybe passing air while you're falling asleep, while you're asleep. Now, exactly what it means, you're asleep, so that's a sugya elsewhere. It means that you're not half asleep, you know, you're certain times we start to doze off, that's called nimvelo nim, but he's talking about really sleeping with tefillin on. So there are people who are machmir in tefillin, they wear tefillin a whole day perhaps, but they got to make sure, be careful that they don't fall asleep. Now the Gemara goes back to this title that Rav Yanai gave to this Elisha. Amai Karile Bal Knafayim, why do we call him the wings of a dove? Shepam achas gozer malchus romi arasha gzeir al Yisrael shekol ameniach tefillin yinaku es mocho. Now anyone who wears tefillin by the edict of this terrible wicked Roman government who persecuted the Jews is going to be put to death. V'yelisha menicham v'yotze l'shuk. Now there's a whole discussion here about this statement and this whole story, that Elisha, who is such a lover of tefillin, would defy publicly the Roman edict and go out with his tefillin on in the marketplace. How is he allowed to put his life into danger? Now, the mitzvah tefillin is a great mitzvah. So some want to suggest that this is called Shas Hashmat. That the normal halachas of Kiddush Hashem, which only apply to three cardinal sins, are expanded if it's Shas Hashmat. And a lot of the tshuvas, by the way, that were written after the Holocaust, to try to figure out if the Jews were, many of them put their lives and lost their lives because of religious edicts and so forth that they wouldn't violate, whether it was something that the halacha encourages. And the whole discussion is whether the Nazi Holocaust is Shas Hashmad, and most of the poskim seem to assume, don't quote me on this, that it is Shas Hashmad. And as you and I know, the Nazis had a particular pleasure in persecuting the Jews on their holidays. The Jews very much tried to conceal whenever they knew when the some Jews were couldn't even know when the holidays were. So guess what? Elisha gets caught in the, caught red-handed. Ra'o Kazdar Echad. One of the officers in the king's, in the Roman emperor's palace, actually caught him. Ratz miponav v'ratz achrav. So the first ratz is referring to Elisha, who's running away from this officer. And the second ratz is the officer is pursuing him. Kevan shehigia etzel. Finally, the officer catches up with Elisha. Elisha turns around, apparently notices that he's about to find him, to catch him. Netolam Miroshi takes off his tefillin, v'achazim biyado, and he holds it covered in his hands. Amalo. So the officer says to him, Mazeh biyadcha, knowing full well that it's tefillin. Amalo, Elisha says, Kanfei Yona. These are the wings of a dove. Poshadis yado. He opens up his hands, v'nimsa kanfei yona. And they were wings of a dove. L'ficha korin oso, he got the appellation of Elisha Baal Knafayim. U'maishno kanfei yona mishar ofos. Why did Elisha believe that the miracle would come through the wings of a dove? Why not the wings of any other bird? We have many different birds. And the answer is, Mishum de Imsil, right, the tuf in Aramaic always replaces the shin in Hebrew. So it's the Imsil, Milosh and Mashal, Knesset Yisrael Yon, the people of Israel, both in Shir HaShirim and in Tehillim, are always compared to the Yonah. And the Gemara quotes a pasuk in Tehillim, Shenemar kanfei Yonah nechpa bekesef. The wings of a dove were covered with silver. Uma Yonah knofeha meginos aleha af Yisrael mitzvos meginos alehem. So the dove protects the Jew, and the mitzvos, likewise. I should say the wings protect the dove, and when the dove has to fly, it does so with its wings. So too, Klal Yisrael are protected by the mitzvos. It's very interesting that tefillin, in this particular context, in this story, in this episode, I should say, plays the role of representing all mitzvahs. Now obviously, because this was the gzera of the Romans, but it does seem that tefillin is a symbolic representation of all the mitzvahs. Tefillin has Kiddush Hashem, tefillin is the mitzvah of Torah study. And there's no doubt in my mind that our enemies understood that tefillin have a power to unite Klal Yisrael in a way that other mitzvahs don't have that inherent power. They attacked tefillin, and even during the Holocaust, you'll see many pictures of, well, you know, during the Holocaust, nobody ran around with a camera, and if they did, most of the cases, the Nazis would confiscate it. They didn't want to publicize everything, but those, some of the pictures that did survive, you'll see how the Nazis couldn't tolerate tefillin. Tefillin represents that which keeps the people of Israel together, more than perhaps other mitzvahs. The Mishnah says that b'nesores shel necharoshim, that there are various substances like the sawdust of carpenters or fine flax combings that protect and preserve the heat and insulate the pots and their mutter. So Gemara says, Iboilahu. What about Rabbi Yehuda? Rabbi Yehuda makes a comment in our Mishnah, and he says that in the case of Neoresh Shel Pishtan Daka, it's Asur. Okay, making this distinction between Daka and Gasa. Now, does that distinction apply exclusively to the case of Neoresh Shel Pishtan Daka? And that's the first side of the Gemara. Rabbi Yehuda Anesoresh Shel Charoshim Koi. Oh, and that's the second side Anesoresh Shel Pishtan Koi. And the first side is that even with regard to Nesoresh Shel Charoshim Koi. So when we get to Nesoresh Shel Charoshim, the sawdust of the carpenters, here Rabbi Yehuda wants to limit the heter dafka to the case of Gasa, but in the case of Daka, it's going to be us. Toshma desanya, we have a brisa of Yudomer, Naores shel pishtan Daka, harehu kizevel. Now, we say the following. Zevel was on the first part of our list of the Dover HaMosif Hevel that's prohibited. And now Rabbi Yehuda is equating pishtan Daka, Naores shel pishtan Daka with Zevel, and it's also Mosif Hevel. Shmamino, we see Anasoris Shel Pishtan Koi. Shmamino, he only made this comment with regard to Neoresh Shel Pishtan, which is the last thing mentioned in our Mishnah. We don't take Rabbi Yehuda's comment in distinguishing between Daka and Gasa and push it further up to the beginning part of the Mishnah, the Nesores Shel Charoshim. And therefore, in the case of the Nesores Shel Charoshim, Hatman is Mutter, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, and even if it's Daka, even if it's very fine sawdust. And now we get to the Mishnah number 2 on this daf, Memtes, towards the bottom. And the Mishnah continues to tell us about other substances that only insulate the and maintain the heat. And therefore, it's mutter b'atmona on Erev Shabbos. Tomnin b'shlochim. Shlochim are skins or hides of animals. And umetaltalin also. There's no iser mukta with regard to shlochim. And we're going to have a discussion about this in the Gemara. It could be one of two things, just to give you a conceptual framework. It could be that shlochim in general has a function, even if it wasn't used for atmana. Or it could be that what the Mishnah is telling me is that since you designated these shlochim for the purpose of insulation, that itself gives it a status of non-mukta. You've designated it for a purpose. However, the gizei tzemer v'ein metaltalin osan. You know, there's gizei tzemer, which are wool shearings, they're used on a temporary basis, only for the purpose of insulating. In other words, he doesn't have anything better to use. He's kind of desperate, so he uses gizei tzemer. But gizei tzemer are designated for ultimately the marketplace. You know, you take these wool shearings and you comb them and you make threads out of them for weaving purposes. That's not something that we do on Shabbos. So as far as Shabbos is concerned, Gizei Tzemer really have no function whatsoever. He designated it on a temporary basis for installation purposes. That doesn't remove its status as mukta. So the Mishnah now asks, if Ein Mitalten Osan, what's going on? This seems like an exercise in stupidity. He just used Gizei Tzemer to insulate his pot, which means that Friday night or Shabbos morning, he wants to take his pot out of the insulation. So Ketzaruosa, how he's going to achieve this goal if you're telling me that you're not allowed to move Gizei Tzemer? It's mukts. So the Mishnah tells us, no telos akisui vein, no flows. I'm going to add a word here, me'aleim. In other words, what he does is he picks up the lid without moving. Without moving, so the lid has a certain handle to it, right? And it has a ring to it, if you will. So he picks up the ring, and the shearings move to the side, or to the right side, or to the left side. They slide off the lid of the pot. And now, all he has to do is lift up his pot. And Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah is not happy about this. And he says, Kupa, if he's got his pot in a certain box, like we also have different kinds of insulations for boxes, and he puts shearing inside the box before Shabbos, so his tavshil is in a pot that is now surrounded by wool shearings, and it's inside a box, is matel tzida v'notel. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is not happy with the Tanakama, and the Tanakama allows him to simply pull out the tavshil. I mean, he takes the lid off, then he picks up the tavshil. Says Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, no. He's got to tilt the entire box and get the contents of this pot, pouring it into some sort of receptacle. He's not allowed to lift up the pot. And it sounds like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is of the opinion that anything that causes something that's muksa to move, even if you don't do it directly, that's prohibited. So clearly, the moment he picks up the pot, the shearings now take over the empty space. By law of gravity, they'll fall in, and he's in effect moved the shearings, which is muksa. That he's not allowed to do. But Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah seems to indicate that it's more complicated than that. He says, Shema Yito V'eino Yochel L'Hachzir. It sounds like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah allows Tiltul Min Atzad. He would permit you to take out the Tavshil and let the shearings fall in. But we're afraid that he might replace the pot. That means for Friday night, he takes out half of the contents of the pot, leaving the other half, the balance, for tomorrow, for Shabbos lunch. So tomorrow, he can only get hot food if he replaces the pot back into the box where it's being insulated by the Gizei Tzemer. And that he's not allowed to do. So Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah allows you to take out the pot, but not to put it back. And in order to guarantee him that he won't put it back, what we tell him is matal tzida. And if he's going to be matal tzida, he's not going to take out the pot, and therefore he won't put it back in. V'chachomim omrim no tilum machzir. Chachom say, you fundamentally, Rabbi Elazar would agree that you're allowed to take out the pot. You're only worried about the fact that Shema, he might come to put it back into the insulation. Well, I don't get it. Why can't he put it back into the insulation? Now, it's true that when he puts back the pot, he's going to move around these shearings, but that again is tiltul ben atzah. So we're not at all sure what Rabbi Lezer ben Azariah means when he says that he won't be able to replace the pot. Why not? To the same extent he could take the pot out, in theory, right? I mean, again, Rabbi Lezer ben Azariah is going to ask him not to take the pot back because he doesn't want to put him back in. But as far as taking the pot out is concerned, the fact that, you know, the shearings will be shifted around inside the box, that doesn't bother Rabbi Lezer ben Azariah, but he's bothered by the fact that he puts pot back. So the Gemara is going to have a sugi about that. Yosef, Rabbi Yonah's son, ben Achinoi, Rabbi Yonah's son, ben Elazar, Yosef, Rabbi Chanina, ben Bar Chama Gabayu. So there were two Amoraim, Rabbi Yonah's son and Rabbi Yonah's son. I'm not sure if they liked each other because they had the same name. Whenever I see an Azariah, which is very rare, I always fall in love with him. I like that name. Rabbi Elazar, I don't know, but at least his father's name was the right name. Anyway, and they were in the company of Rab Chanina, the Kami Boile, and they were asking a bunch of questions, these two Rab Yonah's sons. Shlochin shal balabayis tnan, aval shal uman, etc. Odilma even shal uman tnan. So there are two types of ownership over hides. Your average person who's not a businessman, he's not in the marketing area, he's called a balabayis. He uses these hides for his own personal purposes. What does he do with them? The Gemara doesn't spell it out, but Rashi and others seem to indicate that he uses them as mats. A mat, a rug. You've seen it. A lot of the rugs that we have are taken from animal skins. And especially sometimes they take it from hunted animals. You know. And therefore, the Mishnah has no problem of mukta with regard to shlachim. So let's say, for example, he does Hatmon on Erev Shabbos in these hides, in these skins, and now he takes it out on Shabbos, and what's the big deal? There's no issue of putting it back in, or whatever it is, because it's not Muktz. However, Shal Uman, and we've discussed this concept on many, many occasions, when you have someone who wants to market something, that's Muktz already. Came in the carpet alive, lo metaltalinle. He's not going to let people step on it as a mat because he won't be able to sell it. It'll be second, it'll be used material. Nobody wants to buy used material. So, as far as that's concerned, we have a real serious mukta problem and lo metaltalinle. Oh, Dilma, perhaps. Shall Uman, even in the case of an Uman who really plans to sell the shlachim on the open market, even in that case, it's not called mukta. And again, as I've said over and over again, this reminds us of Tamrei de Iskar. You remember the case where he has the dates packaged and he plans to market them, and he decides, well, I don't have enough dates on my table, and he wants to take them. Rav Shimon says he's allowed to. The Kolshkein Shal Balabayis, and it goes without saying that Balabayis will use this animal skin, animal hide as a rug. He's not in the selling, the marketing business. Amalu Rabbi Yonasan ben Elazar, and after they were discussing this, one of the two Yonasans came up with an answer. He says, Mistabar Shal Balabayis Tananaval Shal Uman Kapit Alayim. An Uman would not want to use any sort of a mat because he wants to sell it on the open market. So that's Muktza. Amalu Rab Chanina Bar Chami, remember that there was a third Amora. And he says, Kach Amar Rab Yishmol Rab Yossi, turning now to Daf Mem Tesham in Beis. And now Rab Yishmol is going to tell us something about his father, Rab Yossi, Shlacha Hava. He was a person who dealt with these hides professionally. V'amar, and yet he would say to us, Heviu shlochim v'neishiv aleihem. In other words, these hides are basically solid, if you know what I mean. And even if you use them from time to time, it doesn't become damaged goods. So we can sit on them. Again, he wouldn't use it as a mat, you know, for welcome when you enter into a house. That's not gonna, you know, that's going to be good if he wants to sell them. But to sit on them, it would be okay. So if my father, who is a professional seller of a marketer of rugs, he wouldn't mind using this rug because he felt if you sat on it, you wouldn't ruin it in any way. It's not damaged second-hand goods. Then, says Rabbi Chama, we should certainly allow this on Shabbos. So there'd be no problem in using these hides on Erev Shabbos as Hatmona, even though on Shabbos he's going to move them around to get the Tavshil out, even in a case of Shal Uman. Meisve, now the Gemara is a Kasha from a Braisa on Rabbi Chanina, Nisarim Shal Balabayis, Metaltonos of Shal Uman, Ein Metaltonoson. So we have certain shearings of wooden planks, and the issue of whether or not these are mukta depends upon who owns them. If they're owned by a bala bayis, they can use them for various functions. They could sit on them or hold up a kli on them, whatever they use it for, that's fine. But shal uman, which are going to be marketed, is then it's mukt. V'im chishev aleim lasos pasli orchim, ben kach mitaltalim. So let's say he decided that these boards could serve as a table, and on Erev Shabbos already he designated them for a Shabbos use, then, okay, the uman decided that under those circumstances I need it as a table. He designated it as such on Erev Shabbos. But clearly, if he hadn't designated it, the Braisa maintains that for an uman this would be mukta. And the Gemara now has to somehow come up with a distinction between Nisarim and Shlachim. So Gemara says, "Shani nisarim de kapit alehu." As a general rule, these are more sensitive. These kind of boards that are made of wood, you want to keep them in their natural state as they were prepared for the market. Because otherwise, if you start using them, in this case as a chair, a table, they'll get ruined. So that's muktz. Toshma. I have another Braisa. The Braisa says, Oros. Now, Oros are very much what we call Shlachim. These are hides. And the Braisa says, Bein Avudim, Bein Shein Avudim, whether they're tanned or not tanned, Mutal Etaltalon B'Shabbos. Lo Omru Avudim Elinyin Tuma Bilvan. So the Braisa takes a stand on a fundamental distinction between mukta and tuma. As far as tuma is concerned, you have to designate it for a certain use, and if it's not avudim, then this requirement of amudim is very relevant to tuma, because it doesn't have a shame kli unless it to be makabel tuma, unless it's prepared in such a way. It's been tanned. But as far as mukta is concerned, it says, unqualified, that oros are not mukta. And that's a kash on Rabbi Yonah's son. So before we had a kash on Rabbi Chanina. Now we have a kash on Rabbi Yonah's son, because this braisa clearly indicates that there's no iser mukta. My love, lo shnot shal balabais, lo shnot shal uman, lo shal balabais. The Gemara initially is very hesitant to want to qualify this price, but the Gemara at the end says, you know what? nishkefelch. It's not tragic. We're gonna be able to qualify this price, and it's only a balabais. Oh, now at this point we have what's called liflog v'lisnei b'dida. For those who are interested, not just in Daf Yomi, but also in the methodology of Shas, this is one of the, you know, I guess one of the fundamentals. That's called liflog v'lisnei b'dida. And what the Gemara wants to know is, when the Braisa wants to tell you that you cannot equate avudim and einam avudim, the Braisa had to stretch its arm out to the case of Tumah. In other words, as far as Shabbos is concerned, the Braisa says there's no difference between avudim that tanned or einam avudim. The only difference is you should know about Tumah. That's a contrast. And there in the case of avudim, it's makabel Tumah. If it's einam avudim, it's not makabel Tumah. So the Gemara now is going to say liflog v'lisni b'dida. Forget about Tumah. Even in terms of Shabbos, we have a difference between shel avudim and she'enam avudim as far as the uman is concerned. That's what Gemara says. Avol shel uman mai ein metaltel. And if these hides were owned by a craftsman and he sells it on the market, then you're telling me that it's mukta. Ihachi. You should have told me, when do we throw in Einam Avudim with Avudim and make it into one happy? And even Avudim is not Muktzah, that's only Bishal Balabais. Avil Bishal Uman Lo. The Bryce is missing a real chunk in the middle over here. So the Gemara answers, Kula Bibalabais Kamairi. Since this price, as we said before, is only addressing a balabayis, that's what we had to interpret the balabayis as referring to balabayis. So in the case of the balabayis, there is no distinction. Even though you could say this in the Hefta, there's a distinction between avudim and einam avudim, because if it's avudim, it's going to be mukta for the uman. And the Gemara says, Kitanoi, this whole issue of mukta is really machlokas tanoim. We have a brisa that says, Oro shel balabais mitaltulin oson, v'shel uman ein mitaltulin oson. So the Tanakama, this brisa clearly says that if the uman wants to sell and market these tanned hides, that he doesn't want anybody using them for any other purpose, and therefore be mukta. But if you recall, Rabbi Shmuel told us about his father, that he was a tanner, and he would say, you know what, let's sit on these hides, use them as a chair. So Rabbi Yossi Omer, Echad Zevi, Echad Zevi, Taltul, no son, since the Uman himself is not so makpid, and Rabbi Yossi certainly has a right to testify to that effect, because he was an Uman, therefore there's no Isur Muktza. Now Hadar Tani, Hadar Yosef v'komim boilahu, you know, there was the same group of Amoraim, and now they had a second issue. Hadisnan, it says, Omos Moloch Sarboim Chosarachas, Keneged Mi. This, my friends, is one of the most important Gemaras in Masechet Shabbos. I'm not joking with you. What is the source for this number 39 Molochos? Omolu Rabbi Chanina Bar Chama, Keneged Avodos HaMishkan. Meaning, there are 39 categories of labor that were necessary in the construction of the Mishkan. And this is like almost the most fundamental Gemara, because the Gemara throughout Masechta Shabbos, especially in the 7th parak, is always going to try to analyze, where do we find this Malach in the Mishkan? Where do we find that Malach in the Mishkan? All the Malachas were done in the Mishkan. And
why is this put in, not just after here?
Only because we know it from that triumvirate of Amoraim. I know you, that's not very satisfying, but Shas Bavli is, to a large extent, it's a a testimony to the transmission of Torah. It's almost like witnesses who come to testify. So the Gemara says that, you know, they came up with this discussion about muktzah for an uman, and they also had a discussion about the source for the number 39 in Malachus. At the same moment, they got off on a different topic.
These were the only people that discussed that.
As far as I know. I can't promise you, but... Oh, well, no, actually, that's not so. The Yerushalmi has a whole nother discussion about the 39 Malachus. But in Bavli, I think this is the only... Amalu Rabbi Yonasan v'Rabbi Elazar... Kacham Rav Shimon Rav Yossi ben Lekonia. The number 39 has nothing to do with the 39 categories of Malacha. The number 39 is a magic number. Why? Because Keneged Malacha Malachto Malecha Shebetorah Arboim Chaser Achas 40 times minus 1, which is 39. The Torah uses the word Malacha. So that the number 39 comes from Malacha. Okay, how many times does it say malacha in the Torah? So what's your answer, Rabbosai? If you have a Bar Ilan computer project, you can check it out by the computer, do a word search. Guess what? There are 40. Not 39, but 40. Boy, Rav Yosef. And it's so interesting that the name of this Tana is Yosef. Because he quotes the pasuk Vayovo Abayso Lasos Malachto, and it says that Yosef came back to do his malacha, and at that point he was whatever word you want to use, he was tempted by Ashes Potiphar. Mimin Yonahu Olo. Do we count the word malacha here in the number, in the counting? If we do, my friends, we might come up with the number 40. Amale Abai says to him, Lase Sefer Torah v'limni. Let's take out a Sefer Torah and we'll count how many times the word Malacha appears in the Torah. And then we'll be able to decide whether your pasuk is included or not. Milo Amar Abba, Barachana Rab Yochanan, Lo Zazu Misham Acheviu Sefer Torah Umina'am. In a different context, the Gemara had again a suffix about how many times a certain word appears in the Torah. And Rabbah said, let's bring a Sefer Torah. We'll start counting. They didn't have a computer to do that, so they counted. Amalei, Rav Yosef says, I can tell you, I took a Sefer Torah and I counted, and I came up with 40. But Kikom Esafkalei, I'll tell you what my suffix is. There are two times in the Torah where the word malacha may or may not refer to labor, to categories of labor. One is, v'amalacha hoisa dayam. After they brought all the contributions to the Mishkan, the Torah testifies that they had enough malacha. What is that referring to? Is it referring to all the creative work that they did to create those kelim and those garments and skins and so forth and so on? Or is it referring to objects? Hamolacha isedayim, meaning that you gave me enough. I don't need any more. But it's not referring to the categories of labor. Is miminyanahu? Should we count it in the number of how many times it says the word malacha? The hakamandi omar lasos trachav nichnas, and then you'll tell me, well, if this word hamolacha isedayim is referring to the categories of labor, and you've done enough labor for the Mishkan, we don't need any more labor, so then we have 40. And the answer is, then we go back to the Pasuk by Yosef, and HaKamandi Omer Lasos Tzrochav Nichnas. Wow. This is an amazing statement. I'm almost trembling to say it out loud. That Vayova Abayso Lasos Malachto is a euphemism for the fact that he finally gave in to the Yetzer Hara, Yosef. Again, later he sees his father, but he was really, that's it. I mean, this woman has, if she's willing, whatever. So Malato, which means to do his job, meant to have this relationship. Oh, Dilma. Or should we say, that Vayova by Salasus Malachim Minyanahu, it means he wanted to come back to do his labor. So he was hired to do certain categories of labor, and he was going back to do his labor, and she accosted him. Ay, Vahay, Amalachai Sadayim. So what do we do with that? Then we're going to jack it up to the number 40. Hachikomo, it means the Shlimle Avidite. They had done enough work. They had brought all the donations that were necessary, and that was completed. Teku. So we left with an unresolved issue as to how to get to the number 39. And it's very interesting, if you notice, that in the statement of Rabbi Chanina, he said, statement of Rabbi Yonason, sorry, he said, Arboim Chaser Achas. I mean, why couldn't he just say 39? Was he giving us an exercise in basic mathematics, basic arithmetic? So the answer is that there are 40, but you should know you got to take it down to 39. There's one pasuk that you have to omit. Now go rack your brains, which one of these two psukim should be omitted? Tanya Kamandi Omar Keneged Avodos HaMishkan. We're going to bring up Raisa to prove the first sheet of that Rav Chanina, that the number 39 is the magic number because there were 39 categories of labor that were necessary to build the Mishkan. This Sanya we learned, Ein Chayovin Ela Al Malacha Shekayotzi Bohoysa B'Mishkan. The only Malacha that qualifies as a Malacha for the Pasuk, Kol Malacha Lo Sas, is a Malacha that was necessary for building the Mishkan. Heim Zaru. For the purpose of the Mishkan, as we'll see, they had to plant. Atem lo tizru. Heim katsru. They had to reap and harvest. Atem lo tiktsru. So, for example, we have something called samamonim. They needed to create dyes in order to color the urios. And they had to plant these herbs and then harvest them in order to put them into a vat and heat them up and create the dyes. What about Hotsa, Heim Helus Akroshim Mikarka La Gola, Vatemlo Tachnisu Mishusarabim Lushusayochid. So it means the Agola was the wagon which carried the boards, the Kroshim from place to place, was a Rishus Hayochid. It means it was ten Tvachim high, and it was Dalit al Dalit Tvachim, and it had Mechitzos. And therefore, when they would take these kroshim and they would lift them and put them onto the agola, they took something from Rishus HaRabim, which is called the Machna Leviya, and they put it into the agola, which is called the Rishus HaYachid, and that's called Meleches HaChnasa. Heim Horidu Es HaKroshim Me'agola Karka. And then when they got to the point at which they would assemble the Mishkan, they would take the Kroshim down from the Agola in Atem Lo Totzi Mishusayoch Lushusarab. That's already Meleches Hotsa. Now we have something called Meleches Hoshata. Heim Hotziu Me'agola LaGola. There were two wagons, and they would have to pass over the boards from one wagon to another. That's called Meleches Hoshata, in which it went from Rishus HaYochid to another Rishus HaYochid through a Rishus HaRabim. Is that Temlo Tzotziu Mishus HaYochid Rishus HaYochid Derech Rishus HaRabim? Rishus HaYochid Rishus HaYochid Mai Ka'avile. Why is that a Melacha? Abayi Rav Amri Abayi Amri Chavayu Itei Meravada Barava Rishus HaYochid Rishus HaYochid Derech Rishus HaRabim. So one Agala was in the back. It was in a public domain. The other agala was a little bit forward in the front, and they would pass the kroshim over Rishus HaRabim from one Rishus HaYochid to another. That's going to be a sugya in Perek HaZorek, which is called the sugya of Hoshata. In any event, the Gemara seems to come to the conclusion at the end of the day that we derive the 39 malachas from the Mishkan, like the second Mandiomar that was Rabbi Chanina. Let's just finish up the daf. Begize Tzemer V'ein Metaltalin. So now we have the following paradox. You're allowed to use Gize Tzemer for insulation, but yet you can't move them. Omar Rava, Lo Shanu Ela Shelo Toman Bayim, Avot Toman Bayim Metaltalin Osan. In other words, there are two parts to this Mishnah, the statement. You have to put a very strong asnachta in the middle, or sof pasuk. There's gizei tzemer, as far as insulation is concerned, and that's mutter. And then ask me a general question. That has nothing to do with insulation. On a regular Shabbos, are you allowed to move gizei tzemer? And the answer is, ein metaltelin bohem. Interesting, some of the Chachamim used to come and schlep from one side of Bavel to the other just for one day of learning. I mean, there's a lot to talk about here with that, but that's more for an Agadita. And he asked Rava the following. He says, we have a Mishnah that says, Tom de Megizei Tzemer, V'ein Metalton Oson, Kesad Hu Oseh. And the Mishnah tells you exactly what you do. Is no telas akisui, V'ein no flos. So you see that you're not allowed to move directly these shearings, even after you used it for atmana. Because the Mishnah is telling you, how do you get your pot out? By lifting up the kisui and doing a tiltul min atzad. But otherwise there would have been an iser mukta if you would directly take these shearings and put it by hand. Even though they were used for insulation and rava, the premise of rava was that if you use them, they're not mukta. Ela itmar hachi itmar. The Gemara says we have to reformulate rava's statement. Amar rava lo shanu ela shalo yichton latmana. Aval yichton latmana mitaltel enoson. That if you use these shearings for atmana, that's going to remove the iser of tiltul, because you've given it a function on Erev Shabbos. Anything that you give a function on Erev Shabbos is no longer mukta. But again, what that means is that the Mishnah is telling you that although it's not mukta, then, so again, now we have to understand if the shearings, since they were used for insulation, are no longer mukta, so why is the Mishnah telling me that he has to do it in such a way where he lifts up the lid? Why can't he do it directly? And the answer is, we have to be very careful at reading this Gemara. Well, yichdan. Yichdan means that he writes don't take me literally on this, but he writes a note on the back of the package of wool, of shearings, and he writes, this is hereby dedicated for the purpose of insulation. From one Shabbos to the next, I'd be as goel. That removes the Iser Mukta. But if he uses it only on one particular Shabbos, he got desperate, he couldn't find any other materials for insulation other than the shearings of wool, that remains mukta. And therefore the Mishnah has to come up with acrobatics in the air in order to allow taking your pot out and moving the shearings. And that's going to be a concept which the Gemara is going to develop here called mukta, tiltul mukta min atzad, an indirect tiltal of mukta. Okay, then let's just make a note that we got up to Itmar Nami.